Please be seated.
Come on, John. Come on. Come on, John.
All right. Well, it's good to be here. Last time I spoke, I think the next Sunday we're moving to this place. So how long ago was that? A while ago. It's been a while. A year and a half, maybe. Good. I'm going to be doing a lesson from Hebrews 11. Apparently, the last time I gave the lesson, I was in Windhoek, Namibia. So, all right, Windhoek, from Windhoek to San Marcos. There we go. Great. So it's great to be here. I really enjoy the opportunity to share with my good friends and, you know, to be around you. By the way, let me see. James asked me to bring some books for the Romans class. We have a Romans class starting on October 3rd. So there's a book table back there. He asked me to bring some books along. So after church, I'll be back there. We have a few books available. All right, so we're going to be in Hebrews 11. Let me give you a little bit of background to the book of Hebrews. Now, Hebrews was written to a particular audience. The audience of Hebrews is Christians who've been around for a little while. They've had some great victories. They've also experienced some persecutions. In Hebrews 10, 32 through 35, he says, "Remember those earlier days. You stood your ground in a great contest in the face of suffering. They've done great things, but they were worn out a little bit. And they were tempted to fall back, to give up, and maybe even turn away from Jesus. There are people who had, had great victories. And yet, you know, the Christian walk, it's a long walk. It's more of a marathon than a sprint, as you know. And I don't know, I haven't done a marathon, I've done a half marathon. And that's the easy part. The first half, that's the easy part, I guess. But I'm guessing you get to the 20th mile, and probably most people are tempted to give up at that point. And so it was written then to encourage us, because really I think it describes many of us, doesn't it? It encourages us how we can stay faithful till the end. So the purpose then of Hebrews is to give heart to Christians who've endured much but are tempted to waver in their faith. And the outline is pretty simple. He basically says, if you want to make it to heaven, you got to fix your eyes on Jesus. And so he tells us how amazing Jesus is. You know, when I teach a class on Hebrews, and Robert taught a class on Hebrews, I even helped out a little bit. And you start running out of words. You got to use your thesaurus for awesome and great and amazing. In Hebrews 1:1-3, he says, Jesus is greater than all the prophets. And in Hebrews 1:4-14, he says, Jesus is greater than the angels. Because the angels were the messengers, and Jesus is the message. And he says, Jesus is greater than Moses. And saying that to a Hebrew audience, that's fighting words, I'll tell you right now. And then he says, Jesus is a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. He's a greater high priest. A high priest because of his own righteousness, not because of birth. And he says in Hebrews 7:1-9 that Jesus is greater than Abraham. And in Hebrews 8:1-13, he says, the covenant that Jesus brings is far greater than the old covenant. And again, saying that to the Jews, that kind of might get them a little bit upset. He says it's far greater. And he says the tabernacle that Jesus dwells in is so much greater than the tabernacle the Jews had. The tabernacle the Jews had, it was kind of like a diorama. Remember making a diorama? You know, make a little shoebox, put those little plastic things in there. He says the Jewish tabernacle is like that compared to that tabernacle that Jesus dwells in. And then he says the sacrifices of Jesus are so much greater than any sacrifice the Jews had, because the blood of bulls and goats does not take away sin. So basically then, if you want to stay faithful, what do you have to do? Fix your eyes on Jesus. Well, isn't that what we've been doing all year? That's a pretty good plan to stay faithful. By the way, how many of you are tired of Jesus because we've been doing Jesus for... Raise your hand if you're tired of our year about Jesus. All right, good. I'm glad to see none of you are tired of focusing in on Jesus for 9 months. Otherwise, you're going to have to put up with it for 4 months. I guess it's 4 months. I'm just kidding. All right. So then the key then is to look at Jesus, but then he gives us several admonitions. Basically, Jesus is amazing, therefore do this. And the first admonition is in Hebrews 2, 1 through 18. He says, pay attention! All right, Now when somebody tells you to pay attention, what's that make you think of? It's like, oh, why, wasn't I paying attention? It's kind of like a put down. You know, pay attention. But you know what? If you want to make it to heaven, you need to pay attention. He uses the analogy of a river. If you're in a river, you could be floating downstream and not even realizing you're moving. You got to be constantly fixing your eyes on Jesus. And then his second admonition is in Hebrews 3, 6 through 14, 4, 13, where he says, make every effort. If you want to make it to heaven, you know, you have to make every effort. You're just not going to accidentally show up in heaven. And that's part of the problem for the Hebrews, is they were tired. They were tired. But we need to make every effort. And then the next admonition is in Hebrews 5, 11 through 6, 20. He says, grow up. Oh, wow, that's another one. When somebody tells you to grow up, what's that mean? It means they think you're immature. And we have to grow up. We can't be infants. We can't be infants in our knowledge of how to be righteous and infants in our knowledge of the Word. And a lot of us have been just sort of not growing. We have to grow up. But then his greatest admonition is Hebrews 11. So we're going to go to Hebrews 11. The key to making to heaven, the key to reaching our goal, which is to be with God forever, is living by faith. Let's read Hebrews 11, starting in verse 1. Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we cannot see. This is what the ancients are commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed out of God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. The key to perseverance is faith. And what is faith? Well, faith is belief in things you cannot see. Think about it. Everything that matters, everything that's important, is invisible. You know, faith requires that you deny your senses. Because your senses tell you one thing, and faith tells you something different. Faith says God is in control. What about when you read the newspaper? Does it look like God's in control? It doesn't really look that way. You know, you can't see heaven. In fact, everything that's important you can't be seen. You know, one of the things you can see is success. All right? You can see success. But I believe for Christians, sometimes success is the enemy of faith. If your belief that God is in control is based on success, then what happens when you're not successful? I'd rather have success than, in quotes, failure. You know what I'm saying? But my faith in God is not based on baptisms and people coming to church and that kind of stuff. He says, this is what the ancients were commended for. And one of the themes of Hebrews, and I want you to pay attention to this, is they did not have what we have. And he reminds us again and again in this chapter. Because they did not have the New Testament. They did not have the prophecies fulfilled. They did not have Jesus. And they were faithful. What about us? What do all these men and women of faith have in common? They said to the world, you can keep your stuff. They staked everything
on God. They refused what the world calls greatness, and they staked everything on God. They refused to be deterred by what is seen, because what is seen is temporary, and what is unseen is eternal. And he gives an interesting illustration. In verse 3 says, by faith we know the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made from what is visible. And, you know, as a scientist, I go, yes, that's actually sort of cool, you know, the Big Bang and all that kind of stuff. Because science didn't believe that. Science thought that the universe was eternal, you know what I'm saying? But actually, they found out, actually, the universe was made out of nothing. But what's his point? His point is, the thing that can't be seen created everything that's seen. So which is greater, the unseen or the seen? But let's be honest about it. What do we tend to focus in on? Well, obviously, on what is seen. That's the human condition. Faith requires that we deny our senses. Philippians 3, 4 through 9, you know, Paul's talking about his life. He says, you know, from the world's perspective, from the perspective of things that are visible, I had it. Awesome. Did they say awesome back then? I don't know. The Aramaic equivalent of awesome. He said, I was the Hebrew of Hebrews. The tribe of Benjamin. I guess that was a good tribe. Relatively good tribe. The Pharisee of Pharisees. As to righteousness, faultless. And he was the student of Gamaliel. He had the PhD from the highest university of Bible study in the world. And he said, what did he see, think about all that stuff? The little certificate on the wall and all his pedigree. He says, I consider it loss and refuse compared to knowing Jesus. I think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I just think about the situation. You know, the whole deal there. I always forget to forward my slides, you know, but that's okay. That's cool. I mean, you got the situation there in Daniel 3. What can you see? 90-foot tall statue, right? Fiery furnace and the most powerful man in the world. And he says, bow down to that statue. I mean, from the point of view of what can be seen, it's not looking so good. It's looking like it's a good idea to bow down to that statue. But they didn't do it. They stood proud. And then the most powerful man in the world says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you come up on the stage right now. Let's have a little talk here. He says, I'm going to give you another opportunity. You know, they're going to play the harp, the zither, the lyre, the lutes, and all those other instruments. And then, you know, you can bow down. But whose God can save you from the fiery furnace? And think about it. From the physical perspective, it's true. His God was greater than their God because he had conquered Jerusalem and the items from the temple of Jerusalem were sitting in his treasury. It looked bad. It was looking real bad. But I love the response that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego gave to Nebuchadnezzar. They said, you know, our God is able to save us from the flames. But even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down to your statue. You know, when God helps us in our situations, it's easy to believe that God's in control. But then again, that's not faith. Faith is believing when God seems to not come through. All right, let's get back into Hebrews 11. I just want to go through our list of people who live by faith. Abel, verse 4. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of him, well of his offerings. And by faith, he still speaks even though he is dead. You know, we don't know a whole lot about Abel. But one thing we know is he gave a faithful sacrifice. And we're still talking about him, you know. After I die, I have to admit, I hope people will still be at least talking about me at least a little bit. And I hope they'll say, man, that John Oakes, he walked by faith. Yeah. We're still talking about him. We're still talking about Abel. Awesome guy. And then there's Enoch, verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life, so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. Do you believe God is going to reward you if you earnestly seek him? Do you really believe it? Do you really believe that if you trust in God rather than your job, that your life will be greater than if you trusted in your job? Do you really believe that if you were to walk away from everything the world says is great, if you were to say to your boss, you can keep your job, I'm not going to sacrifice my service for the kingdom of God. Do you believe that God's going to take care of you? Do you believe that God has a ministry out there waiting for you? Can you see that ministry? I don't know what it's going to be, but I know it's going to be amazing. Can you see God changing the entire world through your efforts as you rely on him? Can you see that? Because that requires the eye of faith. It requires that you step out on faith. We're not just talking religious games here, folks. Enoch, he believed it. He believed that if he relied on God, that he would be rewarded. And then there's Noah. I love Noah. By faith, Noah... All right, are we on Noah yet? Oh, okay, great. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen... And notice this. When warned about things not yet seen. Nobody had ever seen a flood before. Nobody had ever seen it. And again, remember, faith is belief in things unseen. In holy fear, he built an ark to save his family. By faith, he condemned the world, became heir of the righteousness comes by faith. So I would have liked to have been there for this conversation. So God says to Noah, you need to build an ark. And Noah says, well, what's an ark? Well, an ark is a big boat. Well, what's a boat? It's a thing that you have in the water so that when there's a lot of water, you can float across the water. All right, fine. Why am I building a boat? Because of the flood. What flood? Well, there's going to be this big flood and lots of rain. Rain, what rain? Oh, it's like, you know, the stuff comes out of the sky, and, you know. All right, great. Well, how big a boat? 200 yards long. Okay, God, help me out here. Why did I have to build a boat 200 yards long? Well, because of the animals. What animals? The animals that are going to come and get on board your boat. All right, when are they going to come? In 100 years. And Noah, he built the ark. And we struggle with thinking whether God can help out our Bible talk and turn it around. You know what I'm saying? Can God raise up leaders in our campus ministry or whatever? You know, I would have liked to have been there for the conversation with his wife, you know? Hey, Noah's wife. We don't know her name. She's just known as Noah's wife, I guess. Hey, wife. Guess what we're going to be doing for the next 100 years? We're going to be building an ark. Well, what's an ark? Well, it's a boat. A big boat, you know, a really, really big boat. Well, why are we going to build a big boat? Because God told me. All right, what God are we talking about? What's he look like? Oh, you can't see him. All right. So why are you building this boat? Because of the animals that are going to come. What animals? You get the idea, right? And I'm telling you, the amazing thing is, apparently she actually went along with the plan. And then there's the discussion with the neighbors, you know. Hey, Noah, what are you doing? You know, don't we have, you know, laws about land usage here? You're building a boat. Yeah, a big boat. What for? Because God told me to. What God? You know, you get the idea. I'll tell you one thing, though. When the rain came down, and the door to that ark was sealed, they weren't laughing at Noah anymore, were they? They weren't laughing at Noah. Because if we put our faith in God, you know, God is always going to reward us in one way or another. Think about this. Noah preached righteousness for 100 years. How many converts did he have? Zero, not one. Because remember, success in some ways is the enemy of faith. Noah kept preaching for 100 years in front of an audience that were laughing at him. But he did it. Why? Because God said it was going to happen. And Noah believed in things that are not seen. And by faith, Noah built the ark. And the world was judged. And Noah saved his family. Now that's impressive. And then there's Abraham. What about Abraham? Let's read about him. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as an inheritance, obeyed and went. Look at this. Even though he didn't know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land. Like a stranger in a foreign country, he lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, Abraham, even though he is past age, and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky and as countless as the sand of the seashore. See, there's a theme here. Noah preached for 100 years and nobody was converted. But how many people have been converted because of the faith of Noah? How many thousands? Do you need to see the results of your prayer to believe the prayer's working? Noah, he never saw it. He did see that he got saved from the flood. So I'm sure when the rain came down, he said to his wife, I told you. I told you. You know, I think about my friend Cuc Hung. I stayed with he and his wife in Vietnam. And this interesting story. I remember the first time I met him, I said, Cuc Hung, how's it going? And he and his wife, they just started bawling, just in tears. Because they were alone there in Vietnam. They had a small church, no support, communist country, you know, living underground and all that kind of stuff. When I visited them, a church had been built that was a very faithful church. So anyway, they decided to go plant a church. They were in Ho Chi Minh City. They decided to plant a church in Hanoi. And about 2 weeks before they're going to leave for Hanoi, a man broke into their apartment and beat him to a pulp right in front of his wife and children because he was sharing his faith with some family member. It's not looking good. It's not looking like a really great idea to go to Hanoi and plant a church. But 2 weeks later, still bruised and with the marks on his face, Cuc Hung moved to Hanoi to plant a church. They had already been kicked out of their place 3 times where they lived there in Ho Chi Minh City. Anyway, he showed up in Hanoi, and a day or two after he got there, a policeman knocks on the door. And they open the door, and he says, did you come here to plant a church? What would you have said? And Cuc Hung said, yeah, we did. And the guy said, are you the one who teach that unless you're totally sold out for Jesus, you're not even a Christian? And Cuc Hung said, yeah, that's us. And are you the ones that teach you need to be baptized in order to be saved? And Cuc Hung said, yeah. And the policeman said, well, I want to study the Bible. And he was the first conversion in Hanoi. But faith involves believing in things that are not seen. So God says to Abraham, you need to leave. And Abraham lived in Ur. It was a city of great wealth. It was the greatest city in the world at that time. He had a place. He had family. Presumably a job. Everything set up for him. Kind of like most of us living here in America. Let's be honest about it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe not all of you. I know some of you are not in that situation. But most of you are. And God says to Abraham, go. And what do you think Abraham said to him? He said, where? And God says, I'm not going to tell you. Are you ready for the Christian adventure? Because the Christian adventure is going to take you a place you never thought of, if you walk by faith. A lot of us are never going to go to that place that God planned to send us to, because we're not walking like faith like Abraham did. But Abraham walked by faith. And God says, you pack up your stuff, and then you leave, and then I'll tell you where you're going. So then Abraham went home, and he talked to his wife. All right? I don't know about you, but I don't know. My idea of a vacation is, find a place on the map, go there, we'll figure out when we get there. But that's not my wife's idea, believe me, far from it. Everything planned out, where we're staying, and all that kind of stuff. So Abraham says to Sarai, I guess, he says, hey, we're leaving. She says, okay, why? Because God told me. What God did he talk about? As you said, I don't know, just a voice out of the sky said, we're going, so we're going. All right, great, well, where are we going? I don't know. You know? And so I guess they packed up their stuff. And really, Abraham is a picture of what it means to be a disciple, isn't it? Anyway, isn't it? Isn't that what we said to God before we were baptized? We said, go anywhere, do anything. That's what I said. I assume that's what you said. So Abraham, this is kind of literal for him here, there. You know? Go anywhere, do anything, because he's leaving, not knowing where he's going to go and what he's going to do. And did he go north, south, east, or west? I have no idea which way he went. But they left. And the God said, go to Haran. And then later he said, go to the promised land. And Abraham lived in a place that was like a picture of heaven. Because the promised land is like a foreshadow. He was living in a place that's a picture of what we have right now. Are you ready for the Christian adventure? You know, we need to be like Abraham in leaving Ur. But then it didn't ease up at that point. So God says to Abraham, you're going to have a child. Abraham, he's about 90, and his wife was about 75 at the time. And Abraham, he says, all right, we're going to have a kid. And he's kind of, you know, he's kind of, yeah, you know. All right. I still got it. But then Sarah, you know, this thing called menopause, you know, menopause. That was like 35 years ago. And by faith, Abraham believed, and God made him the father of many nations. Everybody in this room who's a Christian today is a child of Abraham. Because that's what happens when we walk by faith. Now we're going to skip verse 13 through 16. We're going to come back to that. We're going to go down to verse 17 to kind of finish out the story with Abraham. And it truly is an amazing story with Abraham. By faith, Abraham, verse 17, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. Now, this is a pretty intense situation. What do you think? Because sometimes God will take what he gave to you away from you. That can be a tough time. Some of us have had some pretty intense experiences. We've had marriages even that were ripped apart, even marriages that have formed in the church. Some of us have lost maybe children who were the gift of God. I mean, the thing that God had given to you, he's taken it away from you. What are you going to do in that situation? You're going to walk by faith? And Abraham, he walked. I mean, he quite literally walked by faith all the way to Mount Moriah. The way John Chrysostom put it, the things of God seem to fight against the things of God. And faith fought with faith.
and the commandment fought with the promise. Yet Abraham in faith obeyed the command. Because God said, I'm going to give you a son. And what did God do? He gave him a son. And then God said, kill that son. What are you holding on to in your life that God may possibly be asking to give up? I mean, we made a decision like Abraham when we left Ur, right? But then sometimes we come to those same kinds of decisions even in the Christian life. You know, there's things that we need to give up when we became a Christian we didn't even know about. I just began to learn about my sin after I was a Christian. So God gave Abraham Isaac, and then he says, you need to kill Isaac. And the amazing thing is, I mean, it blows my mind, is that Abraham packed up his stuff, and he took Isaac, and he went to Mount Moriah. You know, if you're going to walk by faith, you need to follow Abraham out of the city of Ur. And maybe even harder, you need to follow Abraham to Mount Moriah, where you take the most prized possession. A possession maybe that was given to you by the grace of God, even since you became a Christian. And you lay it on the altar. And you say, God, not my will, but your will be done. That's pretty tough stuff. Now let's go back to verse 13. To me, verse 13 through 16, it's the heart of this chapter. And I believe in many ways it's the heart of the whole book of Hebrews. Oh, before we go on, I want to mention one thing I forgot. Notice that it's in red letters, so I was supposed to mention it. Notice this. Abraham faces the hardest situation. I know some people here have faced a lot harder things than I've ever faced. But even what you face, I would say compared to what Abraham faced, that's pretty tough stuff. And Abraham reasoned. By the way, faith and reasoning do not conflict. Thinking about what makes sense does not conflict with faith in God. Thinking, reasoning. He reasoned, all right? God said he's going to bless the entire world through this son. And God says to kill this son. So I guess he's going to raise him from the dead. Talk about faith! Do you think God can raise your career from the dead? If he wanted to? Do you think if you gave it up and went somewhere else to serve on a mission team that he couldn't give you something there? Do you think that's not something that could happen? I think about one time I was in Chengdu in China. I met with this. I was having lunch with these girls, I guess. I didn't even know who they were. They just, here, you're having lunch with these girls. Okay. And I just was sharing. I thought they were disciples, right? I thought that. I didn't know. So I just was sharing about being a disciple and giving up everything and how, you know, it's cool to be here to serve in this way. And this girl started crying. She's just bawling. Well, I make women cry all the time. I'm a college professor, you know. I keep Kleenex right there because I do it all the time. But I thought, what did I make her cry for? And she said, well, you know what? This week, I committed my life to the community. I thought, okay, it's nice, a community, you know, it's a nice community and all that. And she said, no, you don't understand. They're talking about the Communist Party. And in China, believe it or not, this is still a huge thing. And a very small percentage even joined the party. It's like you have to commit everything, your whole life, to the party. I mean, the similarity of becoming a disciple and joining the Communist Party, it's kind of almost weird the way it is when she described it. And she said, I said in front of all my friends and all these people that I will be loyal to the party to the day I die and all this sort of stuff. And she said, if I became a Christian, I would break that promise. I will be kicked out of the university and I'll lose everything I've ever lived for. And you have to think, you know, in China they got the one-child policy and that ain't no joke, folks. And talk about parents living through their children. That's a problem here. But it's bigger in China. It's huge. And her parents, the only thing they care about is their daughter. And all their energy, all their money, everything has been so that she could enter the university and have what you have at the university. And if she would become a Christian, she would destroy every dream her parents ever had. Okay?
That's why she was crying. And she said to me, I'm going to do it. I'm going to become a disciple. I was like, oh, man. Talk about walking by faith. So anyway, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the thing promised. Let's stop right there. You get what he's talking about here. So Abraham lived in a place that was just a picture of the kingdom of God. They did not have the Messiah. Abraham didn't even have the Bible. He didn't even have the Old Testament, never mind the New Testament. And he walked by faith. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. They admitted, look at this, in their heart, emotionally, they admitted that they're aliens and strangers on earth. I'm not talking about, we're talking about aliens as in people who will never, ever fit in. People who say such things show that they're looking for a country of their own. If they'd been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Abraham, he could have gone back at any time. He wasn't chained, but he was willing to live in a tent for the rest of his life rather than go back and have the things the world had to offer. And you can go back. In fact, sitting there in that seat right now, you can go back to the world. Because going back in the world is just a decision in your heart, in your mind anyway. They could have gone back, but he didn't go back. You know, in one sense, it's hard to get to heaven, but in another sense, it's easy. Let me tell you the secret to making it to heaven. Keep walking. Just keep walking by faith. You know, being a Christian is kind of like living on a bridge. Because we've left the old country. That's not our world anymore. We sing the song, "This world is not our home," and we mean it, and we're serious. So we've left the world, and we're in the kingdom, but it's like the kingdom already, but not yet. It's like a picture. The church is like a picture of heaven. Heaven's definitely better than the church. Let's face it, all right? You know, we got our problems here. So we're living on a bridge. All right? And we've already left. We can go back. You can still go back. There's no chain link fence or something preventing you from going back. And you know, when you're living on a bridge, you don't plant some kind of maple tree or something like that. You know, we're not putting down roots. This world is not our home. How many of you like fitting in? Raise your hand if you like fitting in. Just be honest. All right, thank you. The rest of you, either too lazy to raise your hand or you're just not being honest. I like fitting in. I like people to say, good guy, awesome. But you know what? If you're a disciple of Jesus, you're an alien and a stranger in this world. All right, yeah, Xenoi. That's it. You know, we get the word xenophobic, which means hating foreigners. In some ways, this world does hate foreigners, and we're the foreigners. Because our constitution is not sitting in the archive, whatever, their National Archive in Washington, D.C. It's in Matthew chapter 5, you know? We live a lifestyle that is really strange to the world. They're going to think you're crazy. And in some ways, I guess you sort of are. You know, because we say the way to greatness is humility. And the way to, you know, being top dog is making yourself the slave of everybody. We have a strange constitution, but it's a beautiful constitution. You know, I travel a lot, and according to my passport, I'm a citizen of America. But, you know, and I admit it, I root for America and the Olympics and all that kind of stuff. But my citizenship is in heaven. And if you want to fit in, fine, go back to the world. Now, luckily, you know, we can wear Charger stuff. It's cool. You know, our strangeness is not the clothes we wear. Our strangeness is not the food we eat. Our strangeness is we have an ethic that the world thinks is utter nonsense. Because it's the ethic that was preached by Jesus.
They could have gone back, but they considered themselves citizens of heaven. And they were willing to have people laugh at them and consider them odd. Because we are odd. We believe in Jesus. I'm almost done, but I have to spend a little bit of time. I can't skip Moses. Moses deserves a place there. Here we go. Verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he'd grown up, he refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated among the people of God, rather to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. This is describing the Christian life right here. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt. Because he's looking ahead to his reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not be touched, would not touch the firstborn of Israel. Moses, by the world's perspective, he had it all. He was living as the adopted son of the most powerful king in the world at that time. He was living in the palace. He had the best food. He had the best clothing. He had all the girls he wanted, I assume. And he said, you can keep that stuff. And he willingly became a slave to live among slaves for the rest of his life. He walked out of that palace. Why? Well, it says right here in verse 27, because he saw God who is invisible. And he said, everything the world has to offer is refuse. It's trash. Because that's what it's worth. Now, to the Christian who walks by faith, we have some of those things too, and they give fulfillment, and that's great. I kind of like what was talked about during the contribution talk. That was great. But he left everything. Just like Abraham left everything. And he walked by faith out of the palace, and he lived his life under a death sentence for the rest of his life. And everybody who's been saying, Moses, you're great, now saying is, Moses, you're a traitor. Are you willing to be a traitor to the world? Are you willing to say to what the world has to offer, you can keep that stuff. I am God's son or daughter. I'm a citizen of the kingdom of heaven. He said he didn't fear the king's anger. Now, do you think he literally didn't fear the king's anger? Of course he feared the king's anger. But he didn't count that. He ignored that fear and he walked by faith because he believed in him who is invisible. And then there's Joshua. Oh my goodness. Verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the people had marched around them for 7 days. So God says to Joshua, Joshua, you're going to take the city of Jericho. And Joshua says to God, all right, great. Give me the battle plan. He's thinking, all right, how many troops and the armor and all this kind of stuff. And we're going to have Zebulun come from this angle and Naphtali from that angle. And we're going to bring the siege works and all this kind of stuff. And God says, leave all your weapons behind and walk around the city and then the walls are going to fall. And I'm sure Joshua said to God, excuse me, do you have a plan B, God? That's not a very good plan. That doesn't look good. That's the foolishness of being a Christian. We believe that the people in this room could cause a revolution that would turn the world upside down.
Amen.
We believe it. Jesus said that in Acts 1:8 to the disciples, 100 people sitting in a room. You're going to take Jerusalem? All right, fine. Judea? Oh, Samaria? And the ends of the world. And they did it. Within a couple of generations, they did it. Yeah, they did. And, you know, they're walking around the city. And I was there. I was there the summer before last. It's real hot that time of year. It's real hot. All right. It's like 110 degrees. They're walking around the city. And the people in the city are like, what are they doing? That's your neighbor. What are you doing? If you walk by faith. And they walked.
And the seventh day, they walked around seven times. But you know what? When they blew the horns and the walls came tumbling down, the people in Jericho, they weren't laughing anymore. Because they literally, the people of Israel literally walked by faith. And the stones came tumbling down. And then he talks about some other people that we don't think about quite as much. What more shall I say? I don't have time to tell you about Gideon and Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, who became powerful in battle, routed foreign armies, women received their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured, refused to be released so they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in caves and holes in the ground. You know, to be honest with you, I don't think any of us are going to have it quite so rough. You know what I'm saying? You know? We're going to maybe make the sacrifice of giving up our job and going to a place to plant a church where, you know, you'll probably still have food, place to live, place to wash your clothes, and, you know. I mean, these guys, they really walk by faith. And let's finish out here. They were all commended for their faith, yet not one of them received what had been promised. Do you understand that, brothers and sisters? We received the promise. We have Jesus. We have the church. We have the Bible. And we have the Holy Spirit living in us. They had none of that, and they walked by faith. Let us walk by faith. Thank you very much.
Amen. I hope you guys were inspired and fired up as I am, because what he called us to is what were powerful words, are they not? It is a commitment. It is a desire. It is a recognition of who God is and what He can do. And I was just thinking about what we read. That He says, you know, they were longing for a better country. Does that describe you? That you are longing for heaven. That you are longing for God's kingdom to be real. And I hope that that's what we all feel. I just remember one of the things that I remembered as you were sharing, John. I remember whenever I first went to Brazil, I was in a Bible talk, and one of the men who became a disciple, he's a disciple, he's one of the churches even to this day, we were in this Bible talk, and he said, oh, wow, because I said something like, you know, I just want to be a slave of Jesus.
Oh, wow.
And he just thought that was so weird. But, you know, as we got to know each other, he said, man, that's what you do. That's what you were doing. You're just being a slave of everybody and trying to live and be what he's called you to do. And he said, that has marked me. And this was, you know, 20-something years later, he says, I still think of that. That I want to be a slave for Jesus. You know, who wants to be a slave? Nobody wants to, but in faith, we believe in Jesus and we want to do those kinds of things.
Yep.
So thank you, John, for calling us higher. And I just pray that each one of us really wants to give our heart as we believe and as we walk in our daily lives. And thank you so much. We're going to have a final song, and then we'll have a great time.